to begin with, just a few basic points that we'll be following up with later on in the course. The first one is that the basic definition of karma that the Buddha gave is karma as intention or choice. Cetanaham bhikkhave kamman vadami. So cetana is what I say is karma is. Okay, so the exact significance of this we'll talk about later on. But the most important thing to understand is that when we're talking about karma, we're talking about primarily something which is internal. Okay? Karma is something which is inside you. Of course, karma is expressed, or can be expressed externally, right? So we have the three doorways of karma is by body, speech, and mind. So, when we say that karma is intention, obviously it's intention which often is expressed by action, okay? It doesn't have to be. It can be just a thought or an intention or a plan, right? So if you make a plan to assassinate the Prime Minister, for example, then you're making a strong karma, yeah? Of course, if you actually do assassinate the Prime Minister, it's even better karma, but... I had you with that one, didn't I? Okay, moving along, sorry. That was bad. I didn't mean that. Completely. Okay. Okay, moving along. All right, so intention. Karma means action, not fate, right? So this is absolutely crucial, right? So we think of karma as being, you know, your destiny or your fate or something like that. Something happens to you and you say, that's my karma and so on. And we have to completely get out of that mindset of thinking in that way if we're going to understand how the Buddha talked about karma, okay? Karma means action or choice. It's something that you do. The literal meaning of the word, right, is from the word to do, right? The root is kara, which is the basic word in Pali, which means doing, acting, working, okay? And so it's actually the second most, I think probably the second most common verbal root in Pali, eh? The most common one being bahu, to be, and the second one being kara, to do. So karma means doing, right? So it's not something that happens to you, it's something that you do. And the way that we think about karma in a popular culture. I mean, also, it's important to remember that karma is not a Buddhist word anymore. It's not even a Hindu word, right? It's actually a global word. Right? It's actually part of global culture, right? It's in pieces of software, right? It's in everything, you know, that people around the world, everyone knows what karma is, except everyone has this idea that karma is fate. And so it's this kind of mystical thing. But karma isn't anything mystical or anything strange. All it is saying that you make choices and then there are consequences of those choices, that's all. Third thing to understand is that karma is a natural principle and it's not retribution. And this is something which is often misunderstood, especially if people come from a theistic background. And I've had conversations with Christians about karma on multiple occasions, and they'll say, oh, it's this kind of retributive justice, right? But it's not like that, right? It's not like somebody's paying you back for what you've done, right? It's not retribution. It's just a principle of nature, okay? If you throw a stone up in the air, sort of gravity isn't getting its own back by pulling you down and making the stone come and hit the ground, right? The idea of retribution is not the right kind of thing. It's just how nature works. You throw a stone up in the air, and then under the influence of gravity, it comes down, right? It's just a natural law. So it's the same thing with karma. There's no idea of retribution there in karma. It's just cause and effect, right? So you do something, and it has that kind of effect. One of the suttas which I really love on that is this sutta with Yama, and I think this is one of the readings later on. And when the man dies and goes to see Yama, the judge of the dead. And, in the kind of Indian mythology, Yama is supposed to be the kind of the god of the dead, and he's supposed to condemn you and punish you and all of these kinds of things. But there's like a Buddhist parable about this. And in the Buddhist parable, Yama says, well, did you see those messages that I sent you? Right? And he said, what messages? He said, well, I sent down an old man, a sick man, a dead man. Didn't you think, oh, I'm going to be subject to these things. I should be heedful. I should live a good life. And then the man says, no, I didn't pay any attention. And then the god Yama falls silent. Yeah? So the purpose of Yama is not to punish, right? It's not even to judge. Right? He doesn't even pass judgment. All he does is ask questions. He asks you to reflect on your own actions. Yeah? So it's your karma, the choices that you make that lead to consequences. It's not something retributive. Just for clarification, sometimes you say karma in Pali or karma in Sanskrit means the same thing. When we were putting the course together, Pramali and I sat down and said, should we use karma or karma? And we thought, we'll use karma because that's the English word, right? If you look up in a dictionary, it says karma. So if we're talking English, we should use karma. But actually, we're much more used to Pali, so we tend to slip into using karma by accident anyway. So you're likely to find that it's kind of inconsistent. But don't worry, it doesn't mean anything. Distinguishing karma in early Buddhism, right? So we should know that the word karma has been used in multiple contexts for a long time to mean lots of different kinds of things, okay? Since long before the Buddha, right down to the present day. So don't assume that when you're using that word that everybody's using it in the same way, all right? Quite to the contrary, people use it in all kinds of different ways. And we'll look at some of the different meanings of that as the course proceeds. But just to mention a few of the meanings of the word karma that we find in the Indian texts, the most basic meaning of the word karma, as mentioned before, is just to act or to do, right? So from action and doing, it also comes to mean work, all right? So if you want to say, I'm going off to work today, you say, I'm going off to do karma today, right? So it's a normal word for work. Also, karma can mean, in a similar meaning, it can also mean building, okay? So it's like making and creating things. So, for example, building work, if you're building things in the monastery, for example, in the Vinaya it calls that navakarma. It's like new work, right? And that's the word for building, is karma. Karma also means ritual, okay? And this is a very important meaning that it has in the Vedic culture and the Brahmanical culture before the time of the Buddha. So karma is a ritual. In that way, the word karma is not too dissimilar from how we use the English word act, as in an act of parliament. Okay? So it also has a similar way. Sometimes a ritual used in a religious context, but also a similar kind of thing used in a legal context. So when the Sangha does acts of the Sangha, we call them Sangha Karma, okay? An act of the Sangha. So that might be something like an ordination is an act of the Sangha, right? Or say we do the Uposatha where we recite our monastic rules, and then that's also a Sangha Karma, an act of the Sangha. So any kind of formal decision or procedure which the Sangha does is called a Sangha Karma. There are some of the meanings of the word karma that we find used in the early texts, if these meanings were current even before the Buddha. So we can see that the word already had a complex range of meanings in that time. And of course, as with almost all of the Buddha's teachings, he would take what was available in his culture and revise it and change it and make his own teaching out of it. That's a cartoon. Okay, meaning of karma. Why is it important and why is it so popular, right? Like, you know, it's interesting to sort of reflect about this. Why has the notion of karma, in a way, it's kind of gone viral, right? It's kind of escaped from Buddhism and Hinduism, and it's in global culture, right? I mean, there are a few other Buddhist ideas which have done that. I mean, mindfulness, I think, is in the process of doing that, but perhaps not to the same extent as karma has. Nibbana might be another idea, which has also sort of become a global idea. So why is it that karma is one of those ideas which has become so prevalent all around the world, not just in Buddhism, right? And why is it that in Buddhism and in Hinduism and so on, there's such a lively debate and discussion about what karma means and how it works and so on? I think one of the important things that's going on here, one of the most basic aspects of the notion of karma, as with the summary here, it offers a way of understanding the moral universe in terms of natural principles. Okay? Now, if you look at the history of the study of ethics and morality in the West, Of course, traditionally, morality was very often grounded on belief in God. Okay, so God said so, therefore it must be right. And so you have like the Ten Commandments and all of these kinds of things. Of course, that's quite reductive. There's a lot more to it than that in the Western tradition, but there was that strong tendency. And in the 19th century, when the Western philosophers like Nietzsche, Freud, Marx, and so on, started to reject the notion of God, they started to build a worldview where the idea of God was irrelevant, okay? And of course, they did that in a way which was very successful in some respects, right? So Darwin was very successful in understanding biology, and the physical scientists were very successful in their areas. But in some areas, it was a lot less clear about exactly what this means, right? And so this is one of the questions which Nietzsche raised, and which was very important in his philosophy, was the idea of, well, now we've killed God, now what do we do, right? What's left, right? We've taken away what was the moral basis of our society, and Nietzsche wasn't regretting that at all, right? Nietzsche said there was only one true Christian, and he died on the cross. Yeah? So he wasn't regretting the fact that the foundations of Christianity were being torn away, but he didn't know. He was raising this question about what is going to be coming next. And he saw it as an opportunity for a step forward, for an expansion and a growth in humanity. So at that same time, right, historically, we're now talking 19th century, mid to late 19th century, at the same time the Buddhist and Hindu ideas were started to become known in Western culture, including the notion of karma, okay? Primarily originally coming from Hinduism, and then somewhat later from Buddhism, but often as filtered through things like the Theosophical Society and so on. So these notions of karma were starting to filter into Western society and therefore global society, right? It's colonial era, so these ideas are spreading around the world. At the same time as in the West, we were experiencing a moral vacuum, okay? A loss of value. And of course that loss of value was then accelerated through the 20th century with the First World War and Second World War and the apparent failure of our moral universe, of the way that we thought about right and wrong, okay? The way that we previously believed what was right and what was wrong was no longer adequate, and it was manifestly no longer adequate. It wasn't just a theoretical thing anymore, right? After the Holocaust, it wasn't just an issue for philosophers anymore. It tore at the heart of what it meant to be a moral person and a good person. And our world has changed so much since then. And if we're growing up in a world today, we probably don't appreciate the extent to which it's changed. Just reading a survey just a couple of days ago, it was commissioned by the Huffington Post in England on religious beliefs, and of course showed a massive decline in religious belief and a massive increase in the amount of atheism in England. But it also showed some interesting details that even among people who were Christians or committed Christians, most of them did not believe that being a Christian made you a better person. Okay? Even if they themselves were Christians, they didn't believe, they thought that atheists would be just as good people as Christians would be. That's a complete revolution in the way that we think, right? 100 years ago, to be an atheist was almost synonymous with being evil, right? These words were used in that way. Perhaps not 100 years ago, maybe 200 years ago. Still is in much of the world. And even a significant proportion of committed Christians believed that religion was, on the whole, a force for bad in the world. Okay, there's about 20% of people who were themselves committed Christians believed that religion was, on the whole, a bad influence. Right? So this is a huge shift in our consciousness, right? So that source of values which we've had, and I mean, I'm just using that as one example, but we're seeing that all around the world, you know. And you know, when I look at the Islamic extremism, for example, which is very troubling these days, to me, it's another manifestation of the same thing. You know, why why are these people so desperate about holding on to and clinging their views, right? Well, because they know they have this fear, because actually the grounds of their views and ideologies have been weathered away from beneath them by science and reason and so on. And they're afraid, they're holding on. And so they lash out. So these things are, this is an ongoing process that's happening everywhere in the world. And we need something that will provide us with a sense of morality, right? A sense of what is right and wrong that isn't going to be grounded on some kind of metaphysic, right? It's not grounded on belief in God or something like that. But it has to be grounded on something that's observable and that's real, right? So this is, I think, why the notion of karma has become so popular, because that's precisely what the law of karma offers, or at least should offer, even though the way it's received and talked about is quite confused and conflicted and so on. But underneath there, there's this idea that there's a kind of a natural principle. This is how there's a sense in how the world works. We don't live in a world that's morally chaotic. Okay? See, it's almost tempting to say, like, because, you know, if science comes along and proves God doesn't exist or whatever, then morality is not something real. Right? The morality is not something that actually exists in the universe. It's something which is just made up by people to serve their own ends. And so it's tempting to go down that path, that kind of nihilistic path. But at the same time, right, it seems not quite right, actually. It seems like there is something to this idea of morality, even though it's hard to work it out, and even though there are lots of exceptions and so on, but it seems impossible that actually this idea of good and evil really has no relevance or anything. Right? The world does seem to operate according to moral principles in many ways. So this is what the idea of karma and rebirth is offering. So it's an idea that there are these moral principles. These moral principles are grounded in psychology. They're not grounded in metaphysics. So the basic principle is, you know, tam di dai di, is what they say in Thailand. Yeah, do good, get good. Yeah, tam chua, dai chua, and do bad, get bad. Right. So it's a very simple principle. Yeah, and you know, it's very similar in its form. It's very similar to principles that we're familiar with in science, right? So principles of the laws of thermodynamics and energies balancing out and things like that. So this idea that there is a moral principle, so when we have good intention, we perform an act, it tends to have a happy result. So this is the basic idea of the law of karma, which we'll come into detail, we'll talk about in more detail later on. But I think anyway, this is perhaps one of the main reasons why the teaching of karma is so important and why it's something that we need to try to understand well. Okay, so now we'll get into the myth-busting portion of the event. Myth number one, everything is because of karma. The rain today is because of karma. We all made rain-making karma in our past lives. This one is kind of trotted out on a fairly regular basis anytime anything happens. Natural disasters, when the tsunami happened, people saying, oh, it's their karma. Earthquakes happen, oh, it's their karma. Walking down the road and a piano falls on your head. You're probably not thinking that's your karma, you're probably not thinking very much at all. But anyway, so this idea that everything is due to your karma. Now, I might just say for a start that with this myth-busting exercise that I'm going to do, I'm not going to go into too much detail in the textual sources for this, okay? So what I mainly want to do is to try to shake your head around a little bit and hopefully make a little bit of space in there. Most of the textual sources for these topics are going to be in the readings, which will be coming up in the subsequent workshops, okay? So, you know, please do ask if you want to know more about the particular textual sources. But for now, I want to discuss things just in a bit more general terms. Okay, so everything is due to karma. Now, this is an idea which is surprisingly widespread, and you find it repeated by everybody from Hollywood actresses to very senior, famous Dhamma teachers. And yet it's something which is completely against the teachings of early Buddhism. It's not just against the teachings of early Buddhism by inference. It's something which is explicitly brought up and discussed on multiple occasions in the suttas and is clearly and explicitly refuted by the Buddha as being a non-Buddhist teaching, a Jain teaching. And we'll look at those sources a bit later on. But the Buddha clearly believed that this kind of view was made impossible to live the spiritual life. Okay, you can't have a spiritual practice if everything is determined by karma. Why? Well, for obvious reasons. Because everything is determined by karma. You can't do anything. You haven't got any choice. So we should really resist this temptation to go around and just attribute everything to karma. And how the Buddha presents karma in the early suttas is that karma is a force, it's an influence, it's a condition, okay? But it's only one of many. And so we have, for example, lists of different illnesses, like the causes of illness that you can have. And it says that illness can be caused by accidents, and it can be caused by changes in the weather, and it can be caused by unaccustomed activity, and it can be caused by imbalances in the bodily energies and humours and these kinds of things, and so on and so forth. Many different causes. And one of those kinds of causes, which some diseases might be caused by or influenced by, is the result of karma. Karma vipakaja abhadaha. So yes, karma can influence these things in some cases, but we don't know when. So usually in Buddhism, there's always the idea that things have multiple causes and multiple effects. Okay, not a single cause leading to a single effect. It's a very kind of deterministic model, right? One thing leads to one result. Yeah, actually, there are many, many things which are influencing. So Buddhist causality is always flexible, okay, and multiple. And so it's like a flow, an interplay of conditions rather than being like a dominoes. And so this way Buddhist causality is also non-deterministic. Okay? So the Buddha wasn't saying that everything is fixed, right? It's quite the opposite of that, right? The Buddha was constantly saying that we have the power to change. We're not trapped by our conditions. Okay? This is the basic core of Buddhist teachings, right? It's not a deterministic teaching. It's a teaching of conditionality, right? So we're influenced by things that have happened to us in the past, but we can always change, right? We always can make that choice. We're not trapped by the past, okay? And this is, of course, what makes spiritual development possible, right? We're all born stupid, right? Basically, story of our lives, right? We're born stupid, you grow old stupid, you die stupid, yeah? That's basically it, right? But we have a choice, right? We can be born stupid, we can learn wisdom as we grow older, and we can die with some wisdom, right? If we make that choice. Yeah. Of course, now this teaching that everything is due to karma is not merely a kind of a theoretical entity, right? It's something which has a massive, and I think, highly pernicious influence on Buddhist culture. Okay? And, you know, I've heard many stories of people who ask and worry that Buddhism basically says, oh, if you have natural disasters, it's all your fault, you know? People say when the tsunami came and all of these people were killed, it's because they were fishermen, so they got what they deserved. Seriously? Really? I don't even know where to begin with things like that, right? People who have disabilities. You know, when I was giving the retreat in Germany, we had this wonderful blind lady came along, and the first question she loved to ask was that one of her friends was told that, you know, being blind was a result of your bad karma, so, you know, you must be a bad person if you're blind. Is that what Buddhism teaches you? Any other questions on this thing? You know, I mean, to me, the weird thing about this idea, everything is due to karma, is that it's so dumb, honestly, right? I mean, seriously, you know, how many people here have a smartphone, right? So you all must have done smartphone having karma in your past lives, okay? But no previous generation has ever done that kind of karma. Just accidentally, everybody, you know, did that, and then suddenly all of these smartphones manifest in the world. Right? I mean, I mean, how these ideas are so absurd. I mean, it's obvious that the choices we make operate within a world which doesn't care about the choices, right? I mean, you know, you make the choice to come here to do a good karma of coming to this course and studying Buddhism and so on. The sky doesn't care about that. It's just going to rain down on you anyway, right? So we're living in this world where you know, the karma is just one thing. A moral choice is just one thing, and that influences. But there's so many other things which is going on all around us. So there's always this kind of, we have this tendency to, you know, when we have this insight or this thing we think is important, we extend the boundaries of it, right? So it's not just that karma explains the law of morality and why we choose things and so on, but karma can explain everything, right? And so anything that happens, you say, oh, it's your karma. And it's one thing that I've kind of noticed is that in Buddhism we tend to use the word karma, perhaps not even in Buddhism, perhaps in global culture these days. But we tend to use the word karma in the same way that Christians will use the word God, right? Or that Muslims will use the word Allah, right? So if something bad happens, it's the will of God, okay? Inshallah, right? What do you know about the will of God, right? Oh yes, I just happened to be reading God's mind one day, and then I saw that he was having this intention that you should catch the flu, right? What? Right? But then we the same thing applies in karma, doesn't it, right? We say, oh, this is your karma. Well, what do you know about karma? Are you recollecting that? I'll just go and sit in fourth jhana for a little while and then recollect my past lives and then look in your mind and recollect your past lives and say, oh, yes, there's that karmic deed which you did in the past which connects with you getting the flu today. Seriously? Right? So these things are not actual... They're not, when we use it in that way... We're not using it as a meaningful word, right? We're using it as a placeholder, okay? Which is we insert into language in order to comfort ourselves, right? It doesn't actually mean anything. It gives us the impression that the world makes sense, right? That the world isn't chaotic, that things can be predictable, or that good will ultimately triumph or something like that. So we're saying we're just using these words to comfort ourselves when things get bad. Yeah? And okay, well, it's understandable why we do that, but you know, we always sort of try to refrain from that. If people say that's your karma or something like that, you just don't buy into it. It just happens. So we just deal with the reality of it, rather than asking about why. The real question when bad things happen is, what do we do about it? Right? How do you respond to it? That's the critical thing, and that's the karma which you're making in the present. Okay. Does everything have a cause? The Buddha never made a pronouncement on that. Yeah. I mean, the Buddha talked about conditionality and dependent origination and so on and so forth, right? So certainly within the sphere of Dhamma and Dhamma practice, right, we're working within the sphere of conditionality. But whether that means that literally everything has a cause is a bit of a leap, okay? I mean, we know in quantum theory, for example, that certainly under some interpretations that, you know, particles can pop in and out of existence without any cause. But the important thing is that we can understand the causality in a context of spiritual development. Yeah, does that make sense? I mean, if you're asking a common sense question, if you're asking a philosophical question about causality, I don't actually believe in causality. Okay, I don't think there's such a thing. But that's just, I'll just sort of throw that out there to confuse everybody. Sorry, yes.
So basically, when the Buddha talks about how some beings are spontaneously reborn, is he then pointing to the fact that sometimes there is no cause?
Oh, no, that's not what spontaneously reborn means, but it's probably a poor translation, yes. Adhichas Mupanna, basically it means that they are born they don't go through like a gestation period.
There's no between the steps.
No, it's not even about the in-between stage. It's just about that you basically appear fully fledged. You don't sort of grow up. You don't born into an egg or a womb or something like that. It's talking about like energy beings and things like that. So you just like pop into the distance. Boom, there you are. Yeah. But you're right, spontaneously reborn is probably not a good translation. What would be a better one? Anyway, maybe think of a better one. Okay, sorry. Dominic.
Yes, I'm saying that in my beyond, how metaphorical is the realms of heaven and earth?
Ah, this is one of the later myths that we have to talk about. Yeah. Illusion.
Something another person commented on earlier about what is bad karma, and you said it's the cause of suffering, is how you define it. Is that to yourself? Is that how you, or is it something that causes suffering to anyone?
Okay, so the question is karma something that causes suffering just for yourself or for others as well? Yeah, well, generally, for it causes suffering in general. I mean, ultimately, there isn't any self, right? So it's just a causing of suffering. But of course, we experience the results of karma primarily in our own consciousness, right? Normally, but of course, if you inflict, do harm to others and so on, then that will play out in that way as well. I mean, by making those bad choices, they tend to create energies that move in that kind of direction, don't they? Right? It tends to have influences beyond that particular choice.